SBS Radio broadcasting in Tamil.
SBS வானொலியின் தமிழ் ஒலிபரப்பு.
You mentioned that you had input from your family and friends and all that. Where did you get the perspective of Dara and the work that she was doing with the Liberation Tigers?
So I know a lot of human rights activists. I know a number in Sri Lanka. I know a lot of human rights activists through my work as a lawyer. Within that field, I know a number of Sri Lankan human rights activists, and all of them have been very generous in talking to me about the work that they do, what motivates them, what drives them, the things that they've risked, the challenges that they've faced. And interestingly, when I went to Sri Lanka to research my third book, I spoke to again to these colleagues of mine and friends of mine, and I met a whole raft of new activists, civil society activists there. And I did say to them, I appreciate that I am creating fiction out of lives and risks that you take every day. Therefore, I'm cognizant of the things that you've given up to have this profession and to fight for the rights of these people. And the disconnect between me creating fiction out of it from the safety of my home in Sydney. And they were incredibly generous in their response to that. They said that fiction, and particularly in Sri Lanka, where the dialogue is so closed and controlled, that fiction is a really important way to tell these stories. Without the truth coming out, there will be no reconciliation. And fiction is a valid pathway to telling the truth and to telling those stories and to inviting people into that experience, to understand it, to feel it, to try to empathize with it, if only so that we have some measure of sympathy for our fellow human beings, and hopefully so that we don't let it happen again.
You narrate the story through the eyes of the women. At the end, you make Smriti make a choice that brings her back to the traditions and culture of her upbringing, particularly her mother and her, or which mother, you may ask, mother and grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Were you in any way pressured socially or from your family to bring that, or was that your choice?
No, that was completely my choice. My family didn't read this book until several drafts into it where the conclusion was already done, and they would never pressure me to write one way or the other. Amusingly, my second book has a lot of swearing in it, and I thought my father would try to censor my language, but he enjoyed it. He let it go. But in this particular novel, Smriti returns to a greater sense of balance in her identity, in her cultural identity. She recognizes, I think, what I feel, which is that we are actually all things. We are a gifted and fortunate generation in that we can stand back and look at the wealth of cultures around us, some of which are our ancestral heritage and some of which we are new to, and choose. We can discern and we can choose and we can obey or disobey. And in Smriti's case, she not only chooses to embrace certain cultural traditions because she recognizes the value and the richness of them, but because she also recognizes the value and richness of duty and obedience and respect for her family, to honor where she's come from and to do something for them. You know, is it such a bad thing to do what's asked of us, given everything that those people have done for us?
But why?
In Smriti's case, I think it's both, actually, and I'm really comfortable with that, because I think often in questions of identity and values, an artificially binary construction is put forward. We are asked to choose one or the other, and actually we are many things. We are very non-binary, and the more comfortable we get with that, the happier I think all people will be. So she chooses to come back to certain cultural traditions, firstly because she recognizes the value of that tradition in its context, to be within her community and to avow her love for her future husband in front of that community and receive the blessings of generations of her people, which is a wonderful thing. There are many points in the Hindu ceremony that are deeply profound.
And as you mentioned in the book, if people are watching it.
Yes, if people are watching it. Indeed, if people are watching it. Well, I watched my own wedding ceremony very closely, and there were moments where I just really felt the weight and love and gravity of both my community and God in that ceremony. And then the other reason that she does it is because she recognizes that she loves her mothers and her grandmother, and this is something that they want her to do. So Smriti does it for both those reasons, and I do it for both those reasons as the author, as the director and master puppeteer.
I don't want to reveal a lot from the book. There are a lot of characters in the book, particularly Rajan. A lot of mannerisms, a lot of things that he does or says or doesn't say, accused of not talking a lot. Did you base these characters on a particular person or people? How did you build them so intricately well?
My central characters of Nala and Rajan, many people who've read this book have asked me, who are the main characters? But for me, the main characters are Nala and Rajan. They form the heart of this story. And they were based on my maternal grandmother and grandfather, Jayalakshmi Rasnagam and Dr. Rasnagam, Appappa, as we called him. And obviously, I know both of them and knew my grandfather very, very well and had watched them closely over the decades and felt in part raised by them, felt very loved and supported by them. And I love their flaws as much as their strengths, and have tried to create and celebrate them in this book.
Shankari, you mentioned that you had to visit Sri Lanka for your third book. So that means you have written a second book, which is to be published soon.
It is being loaded onto bookshelves as we speak. It's called The Barrier, published by Pan Macmillan this year. It's a very different offering from Song of the Sun God. It's a political thriller set in the near future. So it's set in the year 2040 in Sri Lanka. Mm. And the world has been destroyed by an Ebola pandemic and religious wars. So it asks itself, what would be left of the world if religious warfare and a pandemic, if nature converged to attempt to destroy us, what would be left? And what system of order would prevail? And so it looks at issues such as the role of faith. It looks at Western hegemony. It looks at the West's subjugation and control of the East and manipulation and the way that that is done through science. And it is ultimately a fast-paced political thriller.
This is SBS Tamil, broadcasting throughout Australia. We are talking to Shankari Chandran, lawyer turned author who had recently published a book titled Song of the Sun God.
Are you a Star Wars fan? You refer to that in the book.
I love Star Wars. Fan is not the word. I'm a devotee of Star Wars, and there are probably Star Wars references in each of my novels.
And the third book?
The third book is again a political thriller, and I think that that is my niche. That's what the career as a writer that I'm trying to develop. Political thrillers that deal with social justice themes based in Sri Lanka. Because I find Sri Lanka, it's a fascinating place. It's darkness and light, it's beauty and corruption, it's kindness and savagery, all in this one small island. And to the first glance of the bystander or beholder, it's a beautiful paradise. And then as you scratch beneath the surface, there is this latent violence and darkness that's just there. It's just at the surface waiting to come out, and it erupts very easily. So I love to explore that in literature, using the genre and the techniques of political thrillers. And because I come from that social justice background, I find that I can't get away from writing about it. So I'm always concerned with the politics, the social politics and the geopolitical politics of Sri Lanka and human rights.
Where are you at with that book?
I have finished the first draft, and I will now go back and do many, many edits to make it much better. But I'm happy with the first draft. I was surprisingly happy with the first draft.
What's the story behind the cover?
The cover was chosen for me by my beautiful publisher in Sri Lanka, Sam Pereira, who heads, he's co-partner with a small and plucky publishing house called Pereira Hussein. And they.
That's an interesting mix, because you have a Sinhalese, a Muslim, and a Tamil working together in this publication.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we work together very well. He and his wife, she's a writer, and they both work in partnership with this publishing house, which they created. And they are real champions of Sri Lankan voices. voices, and what they want to see is a diversity of Sri Lankan voices. And he read this book in a weekend and came back to me and said, let's do it. I want to publish this book. And he's pushed it out there and really championed both my writing and Sri Lankan writing generally.
Before we conclude, can you read a few passages from Song of the Sun God?
I would love to. Thank you for asking. Everything ends. She had felt the end so many times in the black ants of Gull Oya, the metallic darkness of a police station, the blood-soaked floor of the jungle camp, and now here. Here where they lined the children in lifeless rows and could not cover them because they needed the tarpaulins for shelter and the sheets for stretchers and the clothes for bandages. So the flies covered the children, and sometimes the mothers sat with them and wailed over them and beat their bodies in pain and anger and loss and more pain. They pushed the flies away, but the flies came back. They were hungry too. Dara begged people to keep digging deeper into the stone-hard earth. The strong carried spades, picks, and hoes, and at each stop along the road that was no road, they dug. The strong were not really strong. They were simply stronger than the weakest. But they knew their lives depended on it, and they knew their lives were not pitiful, or at least their lives had once not been pitiful, but proud and happy. They had once dug the earth for yams and planted seeds and prayed for rain. Now they dug for life and planted the dead, if there was time, and prayed for the end. They heard the familiar drum of mortar fire, like the heartbeat of the earth itself, except the beat was erratic and its inconsistency that kept them guessing, jumping, ducking and running became a consistency that they understood and learnt to anticipate, or so they told themselves as they guessed, jumped, ducked and ran, because it made their lives seem less random, their deaths less random, less fickle, and their lives something they could control, even though they secretly knew they could control none of it. And the mothers wondered, is this how it ends? They clutched their wasted children around them and placed their wasted bodies over them. They took shelter under the carcasses of fallen trees and fallen people and fallen words of conventions signed in faraway cities by people who were certain they would see sunset and sunrise and another sunset and sunrise and thousands more. And they were angry. Not because they'd lost their husbands and their homes and their homeland, but because now they would lose their children. They knew a maddening terror, a chaos in their minds, a surge of adrenaline and vomit and urine, because they knew their children would die. The mother and the farmer and the teacher and the man who drove an auto and had never missed a day of work ran with the doctor and the mechanic and the woman who sewed dresses and secretly loved her sister's husband. They all looked the same now. Clothing torn, feet shredded, bodies covered in the red-brown dust of their village, and all the pounded villages they'd marched through, the muck of the jungles, the red of fresh blood, and the smelly black of old wounds. They'd often done their best and sometimes their worst. They'd lived as their parents and priests and teachers and the Geetha had told them they should. And now they would die as no one had told them they would. Scattered, terrified, and wondering why them? Why like this? Why now, when so much of life before was suffering, and so much of life ahead was unfinished? And when the sky rained fire, they wondered if the sun itself had been shelled and broken into 1,000 incandescent stars that now sought the soothing waters of the lagoon they were trying to cross. They gagged on muddy water and pushed through the tangle of bodies that floated and cluttered their path. They looked up at the sun and felt it thunder down in disbelief.
Thank you for that. One last question to conclude. You refer to the Mahabharata in the book a lot. The characters narrate the stories from the epic to their children, to the siblings. What character in Mahabharata do you identify yourself with?
I must say that despite there being a cast of thousands in the Mahabharata, I'm not sure that I ever identified with any one of them. However, I loved and grieved for Karna the most. I find him a beautiful, complex, flawed and tragic hero, as many of us do, as all lovers of the Mahabharata do. And his story and his tragedy and choices between duty and family are woven through this novel.
I wanted to conclude the interview with that, but how many times did you watch that movie with Swaji Ganesha?
Too many times. I've watched it many times with my grandmother, with my amama, and watched it many times with my Thilanathan mama and Rudra mami in Toronto, in Scarborough, in Canada.
Thank you very much, Shankari, for coming over to the studio and giving us this time and interview.
Thank you so much for having me, Sandrian.
SBS Radio, broadcasting in Tamil.
SBS Vanolikin Tamil Variparappu.